Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
In 2011, I audited a class at the University of West Florida under Dr. William Belko, who's no longer at the institution. That class was on, it was called The Old Republicans. And it was on the history of a small group of Jeffersonians who had departed from Jefferson when they thought he had compromised with his principles of republicanism in keeping with their convictions and understanding of a tradition called civic republicanism. Over a decade later, I wrote a dissertation on someone I learned about in that class and Dr. Belko's class. And this is something that I've come to be persuaded is vital for the preservation of the United States Republic and the Republican form of government that's guaranteed to the state of Florida in Section 4, Article 4 of the U.S. Constitution.
This is Dr. Clifford Humphrey, who is the Vice President of Strategic Initiatives at UWF, explaining the creation of the Center for American Civic, or the American Center. The exact title of this, I always want to get it wrong. It's the Academy of American Civic Republicanism Center. So it's the acronym. I always think acronyms. You always got to think about how you're going to say your acronym. Anyway, so he was presenting to the Board of Trustees the idea. We kind of talked about this before, this notion that, you know, the Center for Republicanism at the UWF was coming, and they've got a 3-year grant for $1.5 million. Not too shabby.
So this grant that we received of slightly over $1.5 million enables the University of West Florida to set up an academy and has seed money to be able to do programming and to explore the possibility of establishing a degree program related to civic republicanism.
Yeah, so that's a part of it that I had not known. You caught at the end how he said they're setting up this center 3 years, and at the end of what they're hoping is going to be a lot of engagement and interest, they'd like to create a new major, right? A field of study at UWF for civic republicanism.
A lot of those deliverables are due coming in the spring. The grant period actually started in October of this year, and so we need to get going. We have a job posting now for a program director to help push those deliverables forward. And so it's vital that we get this academy going.
So they're always already trying to hire a director for this position.
This grant covers 4 main areas of programming. One of those is an enhanced educator professional development opportunity for K-12 civics educators.
So teaching teachers how to teach civics.
It also provides money for guest lectures and debates.
All right, forums, symposia, conversations around civic republicanism.
It gives us money to host an annual conference that we believe will help boost the prestige not only of the academy but of the university at large and throughout the region in the southeast.
So speakers and papers, presenters will come from presumably around the country and talk about civic republicanism to the people who are there. Usually those kind of symposia are held by a department. And there is no department yet for this, but the center is the kind of the pre-department that they're hoping for. And they're going to do, you know, a whole bunch of these things and also eventually develop towards a major, basically. You know, that is ultimately the goal, is to, you know, create something that they can turn into a department.
And it allows us to develop two undergraduate courses that we will be able to test the popularity with students of this potential degree. So I want to urge, I want to make sure it's clear, we're not asking the board right now to authorize a new degree program. That is something that we hope will come with the progress of this academy. And at that time, at the end of 3 years, we hope to come back to the board and ask for their approval to establish a new degree program.
So it's not just kind of a center for study and, you know, teaching teachers how to teach civics and bringing people in, but it's actually meant to be a platform from which they can launch a new department at the University of West Florida in civic republicanism. Lonzie Scott, in his last meeting, asking a good question.
The legislature has made it clear.
Oh, sorry. The question he asked, I didn't include it, was how does this center help us hit our performance metrics, which are the key thing that all universities in the state of Florida are evaluated?
legislature has made it clear that general education courses and the education that students receive in their universities at large should have an overarching goal of helping create informed citizens. And we believe that this program will help fulfill that goal.
Yeah, this fits very well with the ideal set forth by the legislature for creating, you know, aware citizens, having civics, understanding government philosophy, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it is a little bit different from political science. It is a little bit different from philosophy. It's meant to be, you know, how to have a republic, how to have a country that is representative democracy, where the people run it rather than a king or a monarch or a dictator or something like that. We'll come back to the questions in a second, because I told you when we talked about this before that there was going to be controversy over particularly the name. The controversy was actually pretty interesting, so we'll get to that in a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Brought to you by Anderson Subaru. We've got one accident on the books right now at Kim Strand Road and East 9 Mile Road. That's causing some major delays at that intersection, so just be aware of that. Other than that, we're looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. So at the University of West Florida, they're going to create an Academy of American Civic Republicanism. And they're going to develop that into, their hope is, this is not that, but this, the hope is that in 3 years, when the $1.5 million has been used, they're going to develop an actual department of civic republicanism. And Lonzi Scott asks, it's a very obvious first question. We just got done voting on a statement for neutrality of the university.
While the U.S. Republican Party is named after republicanism ideology, please describe how you see the academy aligning with the University of West Florida neutrality policy.
Right. If we're supposed to be neutral, how are we naming a brand new center after the Republican Party?
And on the surface, the academy may seem like it might be violating our efforts here. So could you describe how it's not moving into the political ideology of the Republican Party?
And by the way, Lonzi said, you know, very kind things about Clifford Humphrey, loves him, believes in him, kind of like, if anybody can do this, you can do this. But it's a fair question. If we're going to be a neutral university, why is our first thing after passing the neutrality statement to establish a Republican center? Well, because it's not a Republican center. It's a center for civic republicanism, and they're different.
Sure. So it does share part of the word in republicanism. There's the word Republican, but this tradition goes back to ancient Greece and Rome and was really formally set up in the Renaissance. So it has absolutely nothing to do with the modern day Republican Party.
It doesn't have to do anything with Republican. And I kind of explained this before I had a chance to listen to the meeting, and I kind of gave you an overview of thinking, well, you know, any more than the Center for the Study of American Democracy wouldn't have anything to do with the Democrat Party. The Center for Civic Republicanism doesn't have anything to do with the Republican Party. But whereas democracy and Democrat do not have this tight connection, people have a very good understanding of what democracy is and do not automatically connect that word with the Democratic Party. I think it's not the same with the word Republican or the word Republic even. People do tend to think that the Republicans are the Republicanists, and you know that the words are more tightly connected, and that Republic, Republicanism, and Republicans are all kind of the same thing, unlike with democracy. And Heather Riddell, who is, again, the Senate faculty president representative, so she represents the teachers.
I have no concern about the summer institutes, the webinars, the conferences. I appreciate the clarification about the academic programs. I'm a little bit more concerned from a branding and optics standpoint that the name does exactly like Trustee Scott kind of mentioned. It's assuming that people understand the term. And the whole point of the academy is to teach them about said term. So expecting there to be this understanding of the terminology before they're even in the academy feels like that's a roadblock to successful implementation.
Yeah, people are going to make this mistake. People, and it has already happened. People have been reporting on this and kind of making the assumption that this is somehow a DeSantis, another version of DeSantis influencing education with his views, his political views, and not some neutral thing that is simply there to study and promote civic republicanism. And this is a kind of a branding error. This is a, not that the substance of the thing itself is a problem, but, you know, the name on the door matters. And if the name on the door becomes a barrier, then we shouldn't have that same name on the door. Clifford Humphreys responds.
I want to reiterate that there is absolutely zero overlap between the Republican Party and the tradition of civic republicanism.
Correct. And thinking from a public perception and optics standpoint.
That's right. So we're blessed to have 3 years of funding through courses and through lectures, which will be open public, in which this concept will be able to be revived in the public mind, and our branding will reflect that.
So the question is, you know, should we name the thing in such a way that we know in advance is going to be misunderstood from the get-go by a lot of people who are ignorant about what republicanism is as opposed to being a Republican? Or should we establish it with a name that will simply not have that impediment? And I mean, it's an interesting question. It's a branding question. You know, because if you had the Center for Civic Engagement or the Center for Promoting a Healthy Republic, even, you might do better. It's the republicanism. This sounds very similar. And you say, well, what's the difference? Well, it has to do with whether you're promoting the principles of establishing a healthy citizen-led governmental system. And by the way, I guess I should take a second. Most people don't make much of a distinction between the term democracy and republic. And if you look historically, there really isn't much of a distinction between them. One way to think about it is that a democracy is kind of the process. A republic is the result of the process. Both of them basically meant to the founders something that would be led by the citizens as opposed to a monarch. And so all of these distinctions about what they are, I mean, we, you know, you have representative democracy. A republic often has a representative democracy combined with a constitution that provides for minority rights or limits on government power, whereas, you know, total democracy or citizen-led democracy might be, you know, everybody votes on everything. But that's not what – that doesn't have to be what a democracy is, and a republic doesn't have to be of a particular shape. The words are pretty gray, okay, in their – meaning that I, as a philosopher, okay, as a political scientist, I will tell you that I think that the, you know, the arguments about what these words actually mean is not so easy to pin down historically. So fighting over the name is really relevant to a question of perception, because the name itself doesn't matter all that much, but its perception will matter because you want this thing to be successful. And, you know, if you are talking about promoting the Center for American Civic Republicanism and you send out letters to people around the nation and you tell them, hey, come to our symposium, and they think it's all about being Republicans because it is a sort of natural first read, well, that's a barrier. And if people in the community think that and public money is going to this, they kind of think that, you know. But do you cater to that perception or do you try to teach around it? Well, Clifford is saying we should teach around it, and Heather's saying we need to be better marketing.
Just don't want to get cart before the horse and do something that might signal we're not institutionally neutral, because there's that roadblock. We're not inviting them in if we push them away by the name. And because there's taxpayer money going into this, in addition to the grant, I just want to make sure that we are moving forward in a way that reflects positively on what we're doing here at this university.
And he says, well, we got 3 years, we can teach them.
Regarding the branding, I respectfully just disagree. On one hand, for those who don't understand and may have a confusion, the Academy exists to be able to help correct ignorance where it exists and to be able to teach.
And?
On the other hand, I have greater faith in the people of this region, our community, and our students to be able to understand and know that we're not conflating the Republican Party with a tradition that, again, goes back all the way to the Renaissance.
Understood. Unfortunately, in this very highly partisan environment, I don't believe that this will reflect well, even though I understand your intent and I appreciate the Academy and what it's supposed to be doing. We are assuming that they understand the terminology. And I think that assumption and the fact that there is still support that has to come from publicly funded entities here at the university, that we should consider a more neutral term.
You know, it's kind of interesting, because if you look at the charitable version of what Heather Riddell is saying is, look, you know, people are not as smart as you'd like to believe they are. People are not as knowledgeable as you'd like to believe they are. And we need to be aware of that in terms of the success of our mission. The uncharitable view is, this professor thinks everybody here is dumb, too dumb to understand. Some people are too dumb to understand. And some people are smart enough to understand. And so if you're starting a business, this is not a business, but if you're starting a new endeavor, and you label it in such a way that you know is going to be a barrier for people based on their perception that is rooted in ignorance, well, you've cut your brand down at the beginning. And it, you know, his, that's the sort of the uncharitable view of Clifford Humphrey. But the charitable view is, well, let's try to recover these words in the American political discourse, and let's teach people what it means, and let's do it and not be worried too much about the fact that they're dumb. I mean, it's an interesting conversation. I find it interesting, especially because it's a new, potentially new department at UWF, what we're going to call it, but also these, you know, thinking about what these words mean, including the fact that, of course, the American Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, requires that every state guarantee to its citizens a Republican form of government. That does not mean that Republicans are in office. That just means that it is a democratically elected representative government that operates within constitutional limits. So, yeah, I think it's a fascinating conversation. We'll come back to this more because there was a little bit more drama, as you might expect, especially on the last day between people like Lonzie Scott and Adam Kissel and Zach Smith. We'll come back to that a little bit later. 625 News Radio 92.3, dense fog advisory in effect this morning until 9 a.m. for our area. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. Still dealing with the accident that happened at Kim Strand and East 9 Mile Road. And then we've got a new one that just popped up on Navy Boulevard in 98. It's off to the side of the road, but we're still seeing some delays if you're going into NAS Pensacola. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
This is Pastor Carl Gallops of the Hickory Hammock Baptist Church here in Milton. If you're looking for a church family that is truly amazing, let me invite you to come and worship with us this Sunday. Here's what you'll find: a church whose doors are open to all people wishing to worship and serve the Lord. You'll find a church where the exaltation of Jesus and the accurate preaching and teaching of the contextual Word of God is the centerpiece. You'll find a consistently solid, peaceful, and friendly family of multiplied hundreds of people. You'll find dynamic, spirit-filled worship services, youth ministries, children's ministries, senior adult ministries, men and women's ministries, praise teams, choirs, ensembles, and drama ministries. Plenty of opportunity for Bible study and guidance for your Christian life. In other words, when you and your family get up on Sunday mornings from now on, you'll say, "Oh, good, it's time to go to church." For directions and worship service times, look us up in the phone book or call the church office at 623-8959 or visit us on the web at www.hickoryhammockbaptist.org. And then we'll see you Sunday.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
As a mom, comforting my family is what I do best. Vicks VapoStick provides soothing, non-medicated Vicks Vapors in an easy-to-apply stick, and it dries fast, so there's no mess. I use it to comfort myself and my family.
Thanks, Mom.
Vicks VapoStick, soothing comfort for the whole family. And try Vicks Vapo Shower Max for steamy Vicks Vapors when you need more comfort for yourself. Use as directed.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
Mr. What's up? I never yielded. And as you can see, I am not dead.
Good morning, 629 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Drive carefully in the fog. At least it was foggy around my house. John, you said there was no fog in Milton when you came in.
No, it was.
But look. No, turn around and look.
Oh, well. I guess I came in at 4 a.m., so I guess that's a little different.
It looks like a movie set out there right now, man. It's rough. So be careful. Drive carefully. You know, it is allowed in Florida to drive with your hazards on if you need to.
It is?
It is now. Yeah, they changed it a year or two ago. Yeah. It used to be you had to be pulled over to the side, but
right.
You can drive with your hazards on if you need to. Lights on, but not high beams. You know, simple things. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is no more. It was announced on Monday. The board voted to dissolve the organization, citing the loss of federal funding and sustained political attacks. the corporation funded educational and cultural programming, including many shows on PBS like Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Frontline, Nova, and Masterpiece.
I think they had had their funding zeroed out by Congress already, so it was kind of a vote to do what had already been done for them. Right? Wasn't that kind of the backdrop of this?
I think so.
Congress voted to defund them, so here we have no money. I guess we'll quit. So they did. Just kind of the result of all that. And, I mean, fair questions being asked about the future of some of these, you know, legacy programs, right?
News. I'm Gianna Gelosi. Congressional leaders left their first classified briefing about the military raid in Venezuela divided along party lines over the operation's legality and objectives. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer was not satisfied.
I did not receive any assurances that we would not try to do the same thing in other countries.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says this is not regime change, describing Maduro's leadership
as a criminal organization masquerading as a government. This was not a legitimate president of a country.
Maduro and his wife pleaded not guilty to drug trafficking charges. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz dropping his re-election bid over his state's child care fraud scandal.
So the developments come as the Justice Department signals more indictments are coming. Nearly 100 people have been charged with felony fraud-related crimes just since 2022.
That's Fox's Alexis McAdams. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now, it is a very foggy morning. We've got 64 degrees here in Pensacola. Of course, we'll get to our full forecast with Brooke Richardson. That is on the way in just a few minutes. The U.S. Navy's senior officer is visiting NAS Pensacola today. Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Darrell Cottle and Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy John Perryman will be hosting an all-hands call at the Naval Air Technical Training Center's Charles E. Taylor Hangar. Now, during that call, Cottle and Perryman are scheduled to recognize individual service members from NAS Pensacola area commands and also answer questions from attendees. Officials say that visit is an opportunity for senior Navy leadership to interact with service members at the base. A New York man accused of stalking Escambia County Clerk of Court Pam Childers and firebombing a car near her home will have to undergo a mental health examination. 35-year-old Justin Wright is charged with cyberstalking, attempted interstate extortion, and use of fire to commit a federal felony. His trial was scheduled to start this week. It's been canceled pending a competency evaluation. Federal prosecutors say Wright also committed arson on two vehicles in New York. A note found at the firebombing scene reportedly read, quote, "Send the money back or die." Wright pleaded not guilty. He does remain in federal custody. Well, a major international military operation this week had some deep Northwest Florida roots. The arrest of Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro grabbed worldwide attention, and Northwest Florida Congressman Jimmy Patronis says there's a local story here, too.
Hell, all those men and women who pulled all this thing, they were all trained in Northwest Florida.
Yeah.
You know, and...
And Patronis called it a flawless mission with no loss of life. The congressman says it is a reminder of the caliber of military personnel and training coming out of our area. Now, Pensacola Mardi Gras is launching Second Line Tuesdays during the season. Every Tuesday, the community is invited to free festivities downtown on January 6th. They'll have some festivities outside of the Old Hickory Whiskey Bar. And starts at 5:30 tonight, the New Orleans Ramblers Brass Band will lead a procession down Palafox Street. Several crews were involved, including Daisy Dukes, Priscus, Cheers, and Blues. And participants can walk the full loop or join it as it passes. 6:34 here at News Radio 92.3. Governor Ron DeSantis said he supports the arrest of Nicolas Maduro. The governor yesterday said the Venezuelan president is the head of a drug cartel and said he was sending released prisoners to the U.S. Under the Biden administration, Governor DeSantis also said Maduro deserved to be brought to justice. Senators Rick Scott and Ashley Moody also celebrated Maduro's arrest. Well, some Florida lawmakers are behind an effort to address hair discrimination. A group called Black Girls Govern held a meeting in Orange County yesterday. They're discussing the Crown Act. Crown stands for Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair. The Crown Act would ban discrimination at work or school against those with hairstyles like afros, braids, or twists. It's 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. And right now, let's get a check on our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. Still a couple of accidents on the books right now. Kimstrian Road and East 9 Mile Road. I'm seeing delays in both directions, both eastbound and westbound. And also Navy Boulevard in 98. That's off to the side of the road. You're still seeing some delays in both directions. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thank you very much, John. 63 right now. It's a foggy morning. Let's check on our forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be seeing some fog in the morning hours since fog advisory is in place through the morning hours. By the afternoon, fog should burn off. Partly cloudy skies, high near 74 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 62 with fog still possible. Heading into your Wednesday, high near 75 degrees, partly cloudy skies, and Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 61. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 63, again, a very foggy start to our morning. Our next news at 7, we've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Frank Miller with Your Money Now. Well, oil prices continue to climb today as the markets continue to react to the unfolding situation in Venezuela, one of the world's largest crude oil reserves. Both Brent and WTI futures are up this morning following the U.S. military operation that removed Nicolas Maduro from power. At the U.N. Security Council, Ambassador Michael Waltz defended the move, comparing it to the 1989 arrest of Manuel Noriega, calling it a law enforcement measure against an indicted fugitive rather than an act of war. Meanwhile, President Trump told NBC News that the U.S. is focused on stabilizing Venezuela before holding new elections. He suggests that America could help rebuild Venezuela's crumbling energy sector and may even subsidize oil companies to restore its infrastructure. In other commodities, gold prices near $4,460 an ounce today continue to be fueled by geopolitical uncertainty and anticipation of more Federal Reserve interest rate cuts. On Wall Street, stock futures are looking mixed. That's Your Money Now.
I know that hiring can be challenging. You sort through tons of resumes and you get too many so-so applicants. You're just waiting for someone to match your role perfectly. Well, now, there's a place where you can meet them fast. ZipRecruiter.
Need to hire right away. Start your search for strong candidates. The right fit awaits. Build your team. Build it sooner. ZipRecruiter.
Just head to ZipRecruiter.com/free right now to try it for free. And you're on your way to meeting your match. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So try it now. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Meet your match on ZipRecruiter.
Hey, Escambia. Today, ECUA is talking trash.
Specifically, bulk waste.
July 1st, 2023, bulk service changed to call for pickup. Schedule a pickup by calling the ECUA customer service department anytime before 2 p.m. on the day prior to your normal pickup day. Bulk pickup is still included at no additional charge. Schedule a free bulk waste or special pickup for construction debris for an additional fee. Call customer service at 850-476-0480. More information at ecua.fl.gov.
Know what to throw, 850.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in Thursday at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3 and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
A singer in a smoky room, the smell of wine and cheap perfume. For a smile they can share the night. It goes on and on and on and on.
This bill requires local governments to allow property owners to voluntarily create accessory dwelling units. An ADU is a smaller, independent, fully functioning house located on the same lot as a standalone home. Sometimes they're called carriage houses or granny flats. If this bill sounds familiar, it is exactly the same bill that overwhelmingly passed the Senate last session.
So Senator Don Gates, our senator, state senator in Tallahassee, talking about SB 48 during a committee meeting for the Community Affairs Committee, talking about this bill dealing with housing. And the one thing is allowing accessory dwelling units on single-family residential properties that you, and if you're in a zoning area, if you're in a city or a county, you will no longer be able to prohibit those.
Under this bill, the property owner retains his homestead exemption for that portion of the property on which the owner maintains a permanent residence. Local governments may not impose undue parking restrictions, but the bill continues local governments' authority to control setbacks, construction, and permitting.
So you will still have some control around the land development code, but you will not be able to prohibit these. You will be able to keep your homestead exemption for the portion of the property that you live in. But the portion of the property that is around the ADU, the structure, and presumably the land will be, you know, able to be taxed at, you know, will be subject to regular property taxes. Of course, what are those are going to be, we'll know better in a year.
An ADU lease or rental must be for 30 days or more.
So you can rent them out. In fact, that's part of what this is designed to do, is to create affordable housing, especially in the rental market. In existing or at least in future single-family residential areas, you know, subdivisions. And you can rent them, but they cannot be short-term rentals or vacation rentals. They do have to be for a month or longer. And I think this is a very interesting bill. Now, I have asked Senator Gates whether this applies retroactively, as in, what about in existing neighborhoods? Does this mean that everybody in an existing neighborhood not in an HOA will now be able to build an accessory dwelling unit or what they call a mother-in-law or a granny flat? I think that's an interesting question, because that will dramatically change the nature of a lot of subdivisions if it's not currently in the land development code to do that. The second question, a much, in some ways, more interesting one is, if that's true, as in if this is going to grant the rights to build an ADU anywhere you have a home, a single-family residential home, then what about in HOAs? Because a lot of HOAs prohibit, HOAs, so you can't have sheds a lot of times, can't have chickens, got to hide your trash. I mean, there's all kinds of rules, right? HOAs have. And it would be a dramatic change to the housing landscape in Florida if every single neighborhood, regardless of whether it's an HOA or not, suddenly has the ability to build an ADU. I mean, I think a lot of people would build them just as a business opportunity. People would build them. Can you just, imagine if, 5% of all homeowners decided, if this goes and passes, and if it's permissive to every situation, including HOAs, 5% of all homes add an ADU, that is a massive increase in the stock of housing, which will lead to, John, an increase, a decrease, or the maintaining of the prices?
Increase.
Decrease.
Yeah.
Up supply.
Oh, I was just thinking that I'm going to come move in with you.
But it would also solve the affordable housing crisis. At least in the rental market, this would be dramatic. If. Now, my guess is, number one, HOAs will still not be affected because it's an existing legal covenant among the homeowners, right? That's my guess. Okay, I don't think that the state, even with all the power and might of the state legislature, I don't think they have the ability to go in and basically preempt existing covenants in the HOAs. So if you were breathing heavy for a second and worried, or breathing heavy for a second and excited, either way, probably not going to apply to you. I don't know what it means for existing neighborhoods, because if it's an existing zoning, you could certainly make the argument that this represents a kind of zoning change, a taking. Maybe you could argue that it's affecting your property values if you want to make the case that it's going to reduce property values to have ADUs. But I don't know. I'm asking the question. I don't know the question. What it will definitely mean is that going forward, you won't be able to have HOAs or land development codes prohibit accessory dwelling units. So future home builds will allow ADUs, which, again, I think it's very interesting. I was surprised there wasn't more discussion about this. I was surprised there wasn't more question about that in this particular committee meeting. I have to imagine those questions are going to come up in the future. I'm still waiting to hear, you know, Senator Gates had said he would ask the legal team to see what they say about this. So I'm still waiting on feedback. So there was basically one participant in this conversation representing the Association of Mortgage Professionals. I'll give you his comments in a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. We've got a new accident to let you know about on 98 eastbound in Seville Circle. It's off to the side of the road, but I'm starting to see delays pile up with that one. And also Kim Strand Road and East 9 Mile Road, both eastbound and westbound, are seeing some slowdowns in that area. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Oh, this is an interesting question. Somebody texts in, not related to the ADU issue. Somebody says, if Palafox Street is closed to vehicles, why don't we disable the stoplights at Main and Garden? Now, I don't think you would disable them. I think what you would do is go to flashing yellow, flashing red, right? Because what you might do is create a, you know, because it's a three-way intersection now, so it has to have some kind of control. But you could theoretically go to a flashing yellow, flashing red. My guess is, okay, I'm willing to bring it up with the mayor tomorrow. My guess is the answer is actually pretty simple. This is a state road. This is a temporary construction project, and FDOT's not going to change the traffic pattern on a state road for a temporary construction project. That, which makes sense, okay? Now, maybe they could modify the light time better, but that's a pretty short light going north-south. As we sometimes joke, it's like 5 cars long. So I'm not sure that it would give you much change. But it's an interesting question. I'm a big fan of creative thought and interesting question. That is an interesting question. Same thing for on Main Street. I would think that that's probably not going to change because Main Street State Road. Oh, Main Street is not a state road. Right? 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 Okay, anyway, back to the conversation. What do you think about this? What do you think about the idea of, and you can answer this however you want, going forward, allowing anybody to build an ADU on their single-family residential zone property, if they want one, in new builds? What about retroactively allowing it anywhere there's already non-HOA subdivisions? Would you want ADUs in your neighborhood? Okay. And then, you know, even, you know, regardless of the legal question, same question for HOAs. So I'm curious. I personally think ADUs are great. I love the idea of them. I think it's a, you know, it's a wonderful way to allow family or maybe kids to live with you or to rent out. But of course, if you take an existing subdivision and you add ADUs to it, I mean, if you max it out, you know, one per, and they're all rentals, you've now changed the composition of your subdivision dramatically because, you know, historically you have a lot of fighting about whether you should have rentals in your subdivision. And people don't necessarily like that because they believe that renters are a, you know, a lower class of person or less economically stable or, you know, come with problems, however you want to characterize that. That's going to mean more traffic in the subdivision. It is definitely more density, but that leads to parking issues. That leads to congestion getting in and out, especially some subdivisions that are already kind of feeling the pressure of those issues. So I'm just curious. 437-1620, accessory dwelling unit. Somebody says, what is it? I just tuned in. An accessory dwelling unit would be a small structure on your property that is meant to be, think of a glorified garage, you know, an apartment, a studio apartment, a place that's going to have the ability to live in, but it's not going to be very large square footage wise. You're okay. the folks who believe in ADUs are going to be angry at me for saying this, but it's a tiny home. It's just not, you know, a tiny home. Like, it's kind of a tiny home. They sometimes call them mother-in-laws. You know, the rent would be low because the square footage would be small. There'd presumably be a lot of competition to create these. I think it'd be a nice, you know, secondary income for a lot of people. You know, they don't want to let people live inside their house. You know, some people rent out rooms in their own house, but, you know, maybe you don't want to have somebody living in your house, but they could live at the ADU. It's really nice for older parents who need a place to live, and, you know, they can be independent. It's like a independent living, basically. They're not in your house, but they're close by, and you can see them and take care of them, and they can be a part of your family. So there's a lot of ways you would use these things. 437-1620, somebody says, low rent is riffraff. I don't want them in my subdivision, which I understand that sentiment. Having been a renter, I also know the other side of this. You know, we rented homes before we built a home. So somebody says, you need to consider all the infrastructure. Are the streets ready? How about water and sewer? No, true. That's right. If you, again, worst case scenario or maximum case scenario, you double your density. And let's say an ADU isn't quite double the density because it's not really meant for full families. But, you know, let's say you increase the density in your subdivision from 400 people to, I don't know, 500. Okay, let's say, you know, 30% of your homes build ADUs and they have half the population. I mean, just quick math, something like that. You know, that's an increase of 25% demand on water, internet, sewer, roads. It's more joggers. It's more parking problems. I mean, you know, it's all the things. But it would definitely improve the affordability of housing. Your brand new college graduates would suddenly have places to live that wouldn't be costing them, God, what is rent these days? It's ridiculous, right? For just basic rent in a, you know, a small apartment. What about schools? Yep, it would change schools. It's all kinds of problems for infrastructure. I totally agree. Anyway, you know, potential problems for infrastructure. Then again, I'm sounding a little bit alarmist about this. I don't think it would apply to existing HOAs. I am suspicious it might not be legally able to be applied to existing non-HOA neighborhoods. So it really is more of a future-oriented thing. And so then it's more of a question, well, did you consider that kind of potential density in approving the project or in, you know, building these homes? And so there's going to be problems from the new homes anyway. Now there's just going to be a little bit more problem because it's a little bit more dense than we thought it was going to be. You follow? It's like, it's not necessarily the existing ones. I've been talking more about in existing neighborhoods. Anyway, Nathaniel, I think his name is Bittman. He's from the Florida Association of Mortgage Professionals. I was not quite sure how he would take this. I mean, I figure mortgage people like to have more product to sell, but if it really works, it's going to reduce the price of housing, which they're saying they're forecasting to happen in 2026, which, you know, as somebody who likes the equity in my home, I kind of have mixed feelings about. You know, I want people to have affordable housing, but I don't necessarily want my home value to go down to make that possible. But that's a natural byproduct of having more affordable housing, right?
We support Senator Gates' bill overwhelmingly. We find that adding additional ADU units here in the state is critical to expanding the infrastructure of the state.
Yeah, I understand that perspective.
We find that expanding ADU units is going to help with affordability significantly. We think about young families that need to go ahead and find home ownership. What we also like about the bill is that it does offer some affordable housing for people in institutions like Publix, Walmart, institutions like janitorial services, for people that are in significant jobs where affordability becomes crucial. So we strongly support this bill and think it's one of the most one of the best bills out there to help with the current infrastructure crisis and shortage of housing in our market.
I mean, if rent is running, I mean, what's the cheapest rent you can find in a relatively decent neighborhood and relatively newish construction? What, $1,300 or $1,400 a month, probably something like that is like low end of. And what if you could rent an ADU for $600? How many people would be applying, would be scouring, would be eager? You know, how fast can you create a company that specializes in building, don't call them tiny homes, on people's houses, you know, on their backyards, basically? I don't know. I think it's fascinating. And again, I suspect, okay? I don't know yet. I'm waiting for an answer. I suspect this is only sort of going forward, but the same questions apply going forward. Do you think this is good? Do you think this is good for property values, good for affordable housing, good for communities to have this be forced upon them so that the local city and county cannot say no to it, which is the intent of the bill? And again, it would include rentals. It does not have to be family only. It would include rentals, just not vacation rentals. 437-1620, 437-1620. Let's see. It is a, I'm not sure what this says. It's popular in South Florida. I didn't understand the other word there. An ADU would be a great way to get your college-age kids out of your house, and then they finally move out of the ADU. You have a man cave and or a rental.
Yes.
Nice.
Nice.
Party house.
Exactly. I'm all for it.
It's a workshop. You know, it's your place to go.
It's a man
office.
Cave.
Okay, I don't
leave
love,
it like that. I like that.
I don't love that term, frankly. I think it's
why
condescending.
It's a man cave.
Yeah,
bro.
Just not a fan. But that's me, you know.
You're special.
I know.
Know.
I sure am. Let's see. I love the idea of the college kids, though, as transitional housing. They want to be out, not under your roof, but not fully out. I mean, and they can learn independence.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting thought. Somebody says way more than 1,300 these days. I was trying to be, you know, lowball. I was trying to be conservative on it. All right, 655 on News Radio 92.3. So, again, that's a bill SB 48 by Don Gates, and it's had its one committee, and it's advancing. So a lot of these things are going to be discussed in Tallahassee. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Still dealing with the accident on Highway 98 in Seville Circle over in Mary Esther. We're seeing it's eastbound, so we're starting to see some delays in the eastbound lane. And also the one that happened on Kim Strand Road and East 9 Mile Road. It's off to the side, but we're still seeing some minor delays both in the east and westbound on 9 Mile. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Oh, the word I did not know was casita, which is a guest house. Somebody sent me in a clarification. It's very popular in South Florida to have a guest house, basically.
Si, senor.
So you can talk about it as a tiny home, and talk about it as an ADU, as a mother-in-law, as a granny flat, as a guest house. Or as a long-term rental. I don't know. You can use any of these phrases. Speaking of housing, if you're thinking about buying or selling a home, you want a great real estate agent who's going to maybe understand things like what SB 48 might do to the value of your home or the shape of your neighborhood going forward. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are great at this. They sold over 200 homes this last year. They were at 175 2 years ago, 165 last year. They'd been over 200 in the, you know, the peak of the market, but times have gotten difficult, and you needed a great realtor to get a deal done, and things are sitting longer on the market. They're taking more time. They're not selling same day for cash, multiple offers, above list price, you know, like they used to do. But she and her team managed to thrive in a down environment, up 30% this last year, and selling, frankly, a lot of homes that other people had trouble selling because they're very, very, very good at it. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
When it comes to precious metals, there's only one place to consider, and that's Emerald Coast Coins. They're the local leader in dealing with coins and jewelry, gold, silver, diamonds, and sterling silver. Emerald Coast Coins buys, sells, and trades. And for the past 15 years, customers from all over the Gulf Coast have trusted Emerald Coast Coins for the best estimates and prices in town. Stop in today. Emerald Coast Coins on Creighton Road.
This message is sponsored by the Florida Division of Emergency Management and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
After a storm, portable generators are a helpful, temporary solution until power can be restored. Remember, 20-20-20 to keep safe while using a generator. Keep your generator 20 feet away from your house. Wait 20 minutes for the generator to cool down before refueling. Purchase a $20 carbon monoxide detector to protect you and your family. For more tips on hurricane safety, check out the Hurricane Guide at floridadisaster.org/guide.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
This is just subpar.
Somebody says, due to high construction costs, you wouldn't necessarily be able to put these things in all that cheaply, so the price wouldn't be all that low. But also, somebody, you know, says that they've been already doing this. If you look around your neighborhood and you see that shed that doesn't look like it has any lawn mowing equipment in it. Well, maybe. All right, David Wayne is in the newsroom this foggy morning. David?
Well, good morning. A man arrested in connection with an incident at Vice President J.D. Vance's home in Ohio yesterday is expected to make his first court appearance today. At the home, windows appeared to have been damaged in what may have been either an act of vandalism or an attempted break-in.
There was also damage done to the vehicle parked in the front of the driveway.
And that's police dispatch audio. William DeFore faces charges of criminal damaging, obstructing official business, criminal trespass, and felony vandalism. The vice president spent the New Year's holiday at his home in Cincinnati, but was back in Washington, D.C. on Sunday when that happened. Funeral services were held yesterday for Tatiana Schlossberg, the granddaughter of former President John F. Kennedy. She died last week at the age of 35, just weeks after revealing she'd been diagnosed with leukemia. And Tommy Tuberville is reportedly throwing his hat in the ring to be the governor of Alabama. He filed his official paperwork for this year's election yesterday.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Somebody texted in about the ADUs. If ADUs are kept for the intended purposes, they're fine, but I worry that over time the mother-in-law passes, the kids move out, then what, it's a rental. Some renters are awesome, some are awful, and the bill does specifically protect the ability to rent it if more than 30
Listen days. On air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.